Hey guys, this is Guy Agostini, aka Sunspot himself, and if I can't be hanging out with Jubilee, I'm happy to be hanging out with the Power of X-Men Familia. Hope you survive the experience.
What's up, Familia? Dayspring here with an episode of Power of X-Men to discuss From the Ashes, A New Beginning, which is the X-Men comics. The X-Men comics, not X-Men 97 on Disney Plus. I know it's been a minute since we've talked about the comics, but we are getting a relaunch for the comics in July 2024. So right around the corner. So weird. Back in like when you were a kid, you would think, man, it's March, April. Man, July is such a long time away. And now as an adult, I'm like, that's only like 2.5 months away. I gotta prepare. But, you know, it's been a minute since we've been talking about the comics here on Power of X-Men. And it's because X-Men 97 has maybe X-Men a household name. In the way that Hickman, the relaunch that we got for Hickman back in like 2019, House of X, Powers of 10, made the X-Men a household name with comic book readers again. But X-Men 97 has a level of mainstream appeal that the Avengers in the MCU had for so many years, and we're seeing that success now with the X-Men animated series. I'm telling you, Familia, I go out, and when people find out I'm an X-Men podcaster or I have, you know, an X-Men Instagram page, people are just like, oh my God, X-Men 97. And I've had people talk to me about what happened with Gambit. People I don't even know. People are text messaging me in my real life being like, oh my God, Gambit instead. I can't believe they killed Gambit. And I'm like, oh, ho, ho. Welcome. Welcome to the comic book world, my friend. Welcome to the comic book world. But I figured today we can sit down and we can talk about the X-Men relaunch that's coming in July, From the Ashes. And listen, Familia, I know I rag on the comics quite a bit. And I've really wanted to pull focus from talking about the comics and really talking about X-Men 97, because regardless of how you feel about X-Men 97, whether you like Storm's Mohawk, whether you think the pacing is off, this show is just, it's so sophisticated. It's so well written in how they are delivering the stories and these characters. And it's something that has lacked in the comics, to be quite frank with you, since Inferno. I would argue it started with Inferno and Trial of Magneto, because I thought those were horrible stories. And the comics since then have just not been landing in the way they should have. And, you know, I'm thinking about the Hellfire Gala massacre this summer, and then we get the Genosian genocide in X-Men 97, and everyone across the board is talking about how heartbroken and hard it was to watch the Genosian genocide unfold in X-Men 97. Even people who love Dazzler, who love Gambit, who saw these characters die, their favorite characters die, even they have been like, well, you know what? But this is so well written. And the reason why it's so well written, the reason why it's been delivered so well, is because there were emotional beats with these characters, stuff that made sense when you were watching the show. When I picked up the Hellfire Gala, you know, year 3 issue, and they just have Nimrod come in and murder the X-Men, my goodness, the X-Men look like wimps, right? I'm sorry, they just look like wimps. It doesn't make any sense that in one issue, Nimrod can come in, kill all of these mutants, especially some who are Omega level, like Jean, like our God Queen Jean, and then in what's going on now with Rise and Fall of House of X, Power Stone, whatever the title is, then Krakoa just throws a snot rocket on Nimrod, and Nimrod is, you know, destabilized. It's just, it's bad. It's a fundamental lacking of the characters. And I think when you see that Bo DeMaio working on X-Men 97 has a good understanding of who these characters are, how their powers make sense, what would be truly a tragedy, and giving emotional beats, right? Like with Madeline, we talk about this on the episode that we covered for Remember It. There is a beautiful moment between Maddie and Cable where Cable's like, I'm so sorry, Mom. And Maddie is like, you're him. You survived. It is such a beautiful beat from a plot perspective. And it lends itself to not only this being a genocide, a larger tragedy, but this little Shakespearean tragedy for the character of Madeline, who finally got a new lease on life, who understood that she could be someone apart from Jean, that she can forge her own path and her life is cut short. Oh my God. It's beautiful. I don't want Maddie to die. But in the context of storytelling, in the context of delivering great character development and beats, this is why everyone's talking about X-Men 97, because of stuff like this, stuff of these little emotional beats, of these great moments. When Magneto says, fight, because you're not going to bed tonight wondering if we could have saved additional lives. I mean, what a beautiful line. What an absolutely beautiful line. And we never got anything like that in the Hellfire Gala massacre. Nothing. So this is all to say, I think X-Men 97 is just great X-Men storytelling. And it's been something that's been lacking from the X-Books for years at this point. And we have this relaunch coming this summer. And I'm not that optimistic about it. I do think it's a mistake to leave Krakoa in the comics. And you know, there's this weird synergy at Marvel. I feel like it's this old school guard mentality that, well, if it's like this in the movies, then it has to be like this in the comics. And it's like, no. The comics should be doing their own thing. The comics should be leading the way for one day these stories get adapted in an animated form or an MCU movie, billion-dollar blockbuster, whatever. The comics should always be a priority because this is a source material. And when you please crazy stans like all of us, Familia, who read these comics, I was going to say weekly, but as many of you know, I am no longer a Wednesday warrior. I was a Wednesday, bro, Familia, I was a Wednesday warrior from Morrison all the way up until Inferno, Trial of Magneto. And I have come back to the books here and there. I came back for Fall of X because I was like, this is too big. I'm not going to wait for any of it to unfold on Marvel Unlimited. But now I think the Fall of X books are just so bad. It's a new low in X books. And I just like, I'll just read it when it comes out on Marvel Unlimited because on Wednesdays are now X-Men 97. And we will come back to being Wednesday Warriors 4 from the Ashes. But again, there is a problem when someone like me who consumes X-Men content is just like, this isn't good. I don't want to waste my money on it. I can wait the, what, 5-6 months until it appears on Marvel Unlimited. That is a problem. And if you don't get me excited for these stories, when I say me, I mean like all of us. But if you don't get if we are not excited, Familia, about what's happening in the comics, we are not spreading the love to the mainstream fans, the fans who don't really read comics, the fans who just come in for the movies or come in for the X-Men animated show because they're like, oh, there's a party happening on Disney Plus. Everyone's talking about the X-Men. I want to see what all this is about. We need to be the ones who get that excitement. And I think when you don't prioritize the comics, I'm saying this right now, when you don't prioritize the comics, you're not doing any services for the IP. And the comics should never be a byproduct. The comics should not be a byproduct of what is happening in your larger, you know, projects, right? So this is all to say is that I would have kept Krakoa. I just would have done another relaunch within the Krakoan age, right? We got so many relaunches during the 90s in the Jim Lee era. I mean, some that did not even include Jim Lee, right? You know, especially Phalanx Covenant. Haha, you know, it had nothing to do with what Jim Lee was doing years before. And, you know, we got Zero Tolerance. We got Onslaught. We got Age of Apocalypse. I would have assumed that Krakoa was the new status quo for the X-Men, and Krakoa was here to stay. So even if they were going to relaunch the books, it would be relaunched within the context of Krakoa. But there is no denying that Krakoa revitalized the X-Men IP from a comic book standpoint, and now X-Men 97 has made the X-Men mainstream household names again. So I really wish there would be a focus, especially since Kevin Feige, we forget about this. Kevin Feige is like CEO or COO, whatever the title is, for the Marvel Comics division. And if I were Kevin Feige, I would be like, concentrate on making good stories. Do not care. Do not worry what we are doing in X-Men 97 or what my larger plans are for the MCU. Just write good X-Men stories in the comics, because comics, movies, and television shows all have different audiences, Familia, all different types of audiences. And again, you want to focus on making sure those Wednesday warriors are coming in, going to the comic book store, buying those comics and saying, ooh, just wait till they do this in the MCU or in X-Men 97. And it worries me that we are seeing now more of a byproduct of X-Men 97 in the comics now. I mean, not 100%, right? Because it looks like the Xavier School is closed down. But this is ridiculous. Why is this even an issue? Why are we seeing? Can I ask Familia? Why are we even being told, like, Jubilee looking at the Xavier Institute and it being, you know, closed down? It's been years since the X-Men have been in the mansion. This isn't anything new. Okay, so let's dive into this IGN article that breaks down all the comics we are going to be seeing. I'm going to give my feels on it. You know, we're going to be a little raw about it here. So I'll give you my thoughts on some of the talent and some of the people working on these books and my personal feels on it. I'm going to try to be as objective as possible, but I do feel strongly about some stuff. So I apologize in advance, Familia, if we get a little too passionate here. But one of the things that we should talk about is that they really needed to build hype for this relaunch since they were leaving Krakoa. And when we were getting into the Krakoan Age in 2019, Jonathan Hickman, Pepe Larraz were headlining this relaunch. And all of us, our mouths just dropped when we heard about it. There was so much hype for House of X issue one, so much hype for it. And it delivered. It delivered. We know that Marvel was trying to replicate that sort of hype, which sadly, the hype isn't here. The hype is for X-Men, for X-Men 97. Yes, there is hype for so much X-Men 97, but for From the Ashes, this comic book relaunch, the hype is nowhere near a Jim Lee, Grant Morrison, or Hickman. I'm sorry. We do know that they were trying very hard to court Jim Lee. That was something that was being discussed at San Diego Comic-Con behind the scenes, sort of word around the industry. Rob Liefeld outlined it in his podcast, Insider Information, right there. Go check out Rob Liefeld's podcast on it. But they wanted Jim Lee to come back. However, Jim Lee, who is at DC in his comics contract with them, his contract with DC was up for negotiation, so there was a window where they could have courted him if they wanted to, but he ultimately went and re-signed with DC, as according to Rob, went back and signed again with DC and just didn't want to do what Rob assumes is just a rigorous schedule that comes with drawing a monthly comic. It's just a very rigorous thing, and Jim Lee apparently has a very set ritual of working insane hours to deliver beautiful pages, and he doesn't really do that anymore. He's focused more on management and looking over the company, so this would be a shift. And you know, Rob just talks about how that's time consuming, especially if you have a family. You know, you're stuck in your room while everyone is out playing in the pool. You're stuck in your studio drawing. So, you know, we're not getting Jim Lee again. That's why Rob speculated, because of that kind of schedule and why he would stay more on the management editorial side. But let's take a look at what we are getting with this relaunch. From the Ashes, IGN article published 2 days ago. Apologies for being a little late coming to it and talking about it. I mean, you may have heard of a little episode called Remembrance, as we just mentioned it a few moments ago. But, you know, Gambit is no longer with us on that. You'll be fine. I listen. It's comics. It's a fantastical world of superheroes. They die to return. But they did something very extraordinary with Gambit's death, and it has eclipsed a lot of the content that we have been posting on Power of X-Men. Anyways, so let's read this IGN article. It's pretty long, so let's get comfortable. We'll read some of the comments here. This is the first time in a long time I've seen an article with a lot of comments. I'm sure a lot of you are like, oh, there's always comments. But some of the articles I've visited, I don't see a lot of comments on them. Just something to muse. All right. Marvel's bringing the current era of X-Men comics to a close this summer. But what's next for the franchise? Marvel answered that question at South by Southwest with a panel focused on upcoming relaunch called From the Ashes. From the Ashes is obviously a title associated with Jean, specifically also Madeline, during an era where Jean was believed dead. Could Madeline be Jean reincarnated? And then, of course, we do get Jean coming back. The Fantastic Four discover her and X-Factor being formed. So that little window of 4 or 5 years of comic book storytelling, that is From the Ashes. So there's a lot of Phoenix implications with that title. And also From the Ashes, you know, they're coming out of Krakoa. Following the conclusion of Fall of the House of X and Rise of the Powers of Ten this summer, From the Ashes is a new initiative spearheaded by incoming group editor Tom Brevoort. From the Ashes is built around three core X-Men titles, X-Men by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman, Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez, and Exceptional X-Men by Eve L. Ewing and Carmen Carnero. Now, you know, the thing about Tom Brevoort that makes it really hard for me to accept is that Tom Brevoort, as I've mentioned before in this podcast, had a Formspring, which was a short-lived social media platform where people could submit questions and the person answers them. So because Tom Brevoort, you know, has been such a major figure at Marvel, working on the Avengers books, House of M, Avengers Disassembled, you know, very great series that really pushed the envelope in storytelling. That, by the way, I happen to think House of M, the comic, isn't the best comic book out there, but there's no denying that House of M has aged so nicely within the canon of Marvel Universe comics. But so, you know, he would troll X-Men fans, specifically Jean Grey fans at the time, and say just very facetious things. It's kind of hard to let go because at a point where you are a very, what's the word I'm looking for, passionate fan, and you're trying to be respectful, and someone's giving you snide, kind of like cocky remarks, you're like, okay, you know, like, I'm sorry. I really wish that we could have, you know, gotten a better response from him during that era. But he used to say things like, I hate any characters with the name Gray in it. And it's just, I don't know. I think you do have a responsibility to your readership once you're at that kind of level, once you're elevated and you're working on these books. You may have your personal preferences, which is fine. That's, of course, okay. No one's going to comment about that. But maybe you don't troll the fan base that is paying weekly for these comics. You know, like, maybe just respect it, not, and sort of just move on. You know, you have nothing to prove to them. And by the way, in fairness to Tom, it's, a lot of people would make fun of him and make fun of his hat. So I get it. You have to sort of toughen up. But I think you have to take it on the chin because that's just, you know, comics. Very passionate fans who are opinionated and may not actually say the nicest things is not okay by any means, but it is part of the territory that comes with when you elevate yourself. Certainly with Power of X-Men, for me, like, I eat my words now because I used to say, man, we get no hate here on Power of X-Men. And now on the daily, these comments that come in, as we've grown, as we've had, you know, more of a say out there, as a familia keeps growing, some people come into the familia who aren't very nice, say some really interesting things. But, you know, it is what it is in that regard, is all I'm saying. At this point, it's not a secret. And if you're being paid and elevated at Marvel to be a figurehead here, you need some kind of media training on how to deal with fans. That's it. So, you know, I believe Formspring, that was like, what, like 2009, 2013, that kind of like window there. So right around Second Coming to like AVX. I'm sorry, I'm still embittered by it. I'm so embittered by his words. And, you know, that's fine. I don't think we'll ever have Tom Brevoort on the podcast, so I'm not afraid to like speak my mind on that. But, you know, never say never, A, but B, I just think it's left such a bad taste in my mouth. And I do worry about, does this person understand what makes the X-Men special and the way that Bo DeMaio understands what makes the X-Men special. That's all. Again, we can look at the, when we're looking at IPs, when we're looking at the X-Men, there are two approaches we can come by, right? One, which is, what is my personal preference on a story? Like, what stories do I want to see as a fan and be crazy and be like, oh, they didn't do this. And that's fine. That's a very valid point. But then there's also another perspective where it's like, wait a minute. Is this the smartest move thematically for the brand? Are you going to tank the brand? Stuff like that. What is this editorial direction? And that's what I'm trying to focus on here, the latter, which is I would have brought in someone as an editor like Mike Martz. I thought Mike Martz, I was just talking about this with War Lion a couple hours ago. I thought Mike Martz, who was the X-Men group editor, was phenomenal in his role. Tom Brevoort, I'm worried because, again, I think he's delivered great stories for the Avengers. I've always taken him as being a very impassionate Avengers fan, which is great. But I worry, does he have that passion for the X-Men? Does he understand what makes the X-Men special? The answer is wait and see. And again, Familia, I'm happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be begging Tom Brevoort to come in on the podcast because he's just revolutionized the X-Men comics. And I can't wait for the next week. I will tell you, it has been a very long time that I have been very eager for next week's issue or for the following issue of a book. I remember there was a time, I mean, the height was probably, you know, Messiah Complex all the way through AVX. No, also Bendis's. I really enjoyed Bendis's run. I know that is contentious, but I really enjoyed Bendis's run on the X-Books. But it has been a minute. From me, really, really just cannot wait till the next week or next month to get the following issue of X-Men. And it came back during the beginning of the Krakoan era, but it has been, oh my God, a couple of years before I've really, really wanted to see the next issue. But anyways, in some ways, this relaunch appears to be a return to a more traditional status quo for the X-Men, which again, we ranted about that. Don't know if that's the best approach. The mutant nation of Krakoa is seemingly no more, with the X-Men themselves becoming fugitives in a world that fears and hates them more than ever. But that doesn't mean they can't still be the heroes Earth needs. In a press release from Marvel, over the 60-year history, the X-Men have been many things. Outcasts, teachers, revolutionaries, heroes. Above all, they're a species and the future is still theirs for the taking. Krakoa showed the world what Homo Superior is truly capable of, and now the X-Men have to fight harder than ever to keep Professor X's dream alive. What is Professor X's dream? Right? A coexistence between humans and mutants? It's fine. I do think at the core of Krakoa, that was his motivation, but he has been long radicalized from that dream. We haven't seen it in a long time. These three core series will approach the X-Men's vital mission with distinct and relevant perspectives while remaining faithful to the power of storytelling of the mutant metaphor. All right, so the first one is X-Men, with the creative team being Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman. And the team roster is Cyclops, Magneto, Beast, Psylocke, Kid Omega, Temper, who was formerly, oh yeah, Magic, and Juggernaut. The series features Cyclops leading a team of heavy hitters from a remote base in Alaska. Marvel teases that the team is battling for the destiny and philosophy of the mutant species. Okay. Great. The X-Men are fractured in the aftermath at the end of Krakoa, scattered across the globe without a central base of operation, said Tom Brevoort. What this means in practice is that all three titles carrying the name X-Men are core X-Men series. They are all centered around one of the major aspects of what the team has been about at different points. This is very much by design. We want to field a wide assortment of X titles with different styles and tones and approaches. An X book for virtually any taste. That's not anything new. You know, we had Jordan D. White on the podcast maybe like, what, 2-3 years ago at this point. And that was the philosophy with the Krakoan books. The reason why you had 12 Krakoan books is because there was a book for any taste. So that's fine. I mean, listen, that party line is something Marvel is going to be saying for the next 80 years, right? I mean, that's not anything new. That's like a standard, you know, publicity line. We had Jed McKay on Masters of Comic Books back in the day. I loved Jed McKay. I thought he was a wonderful, absolutely wonderful person to interview. Great writer. Love Moon Knight. Jed MacKay is exceptionally talented. I have no doubt he is going to deliver to us a fantastic story. Ryan Stegman, I really do love his art. It looks absolutely beautiful here. Very vibrant, very kinetic. I am not wild about the costumes. It's fine. You know, I remember at the time when I was growing up, we had the X-Men Revolution, not Evolution, the TV show, but X-Men Revolution with covers and costumes by Art Adams. And at the time, I was like, meh, meh. Like Jean in that red suit with the Phoenix, you know, logo on it. I was like, meh. And now I love them. Now I love them. So, you know, my initial onset here is like, eh? But I'm sure I will come to love them. Psylocke looks pretty standard. And of course, this is Quan and Psylocke. She looks pretty standard, you know, like purple bodysuit and, you know, her katana, blade, whatever, psychic energy on it. Magic, big old sword and her black costume that she's had since Bendis's era. I will say, I think Kid Omega has a really nice, like, skater punk Vans look with a black and white checkered shirt and a pink jacket. That's great. Beast is on this team as well. Eh, he just looks, you know, like traditional old Beast. So I guess we're just going to get a version of Hank that was very loved back in the day. But, you know, the three that don't really land well for me are Juggernaut, Temper. Is that her name? Temper and Cyclops. I really liked Temper. That's her new code name. She was one of the five lights. She was a major factor in Wolverine and the X-Men back in the day, the Jason Aaron comic. And since then, I haven't really seen her in the X-Books. I'm not saying she hasn't appeared, but she hasn't been a major player, certainly in the way she's getting right now. You know, she has the power to control fire and ice, from what I remember. But even if I didn't remember, I am looking at her costume right now, and it's a little on the nose. Half of it is red, the other half is blue. So yes, she can control fire and ice, and she is one of the five lights. And I loved the five lights. Trust me, I was a big fan of the five lights. I thought there was some kind of imagery with the number five and the Phoenix five, but no, I never went anywhere. But it just looks a little corny and on the nose to me. And, you know, Familia, I say this all the time. I like to be, as a reader, I like to be respected, but not a fan of the costume. Glad the character is there. Not a fan of the costume. Juggernaut's costume is all black, and he has a big X on his helmet in the way that Cyclops during the Revolution era. Not the Art Adams X-Men Revolution era, but the Revolution era for Bendis. They do recycle a lot of names at Marvel, don't they? A lot of names for eras. But Cyclops in his uncanny X-Men Revolution when Bendis was writing him, the black and red costume. That's what Juggernaut has here. Listen, our boy Cyclops, I will always want Cyclops to be with his hair out a little bit more Jim Lee. I'm never a fan when he has like the cap over his head. I do like the Krakoan era Cyclops quite a bit. I've always really liked Cyclops costumes, now that I'm thinking about it. Always liked it, from X-Factor to Jim Lee to New X-Men to Astonishing to Revolution. I've always thought the character has always looked good. I mean, he naturally always just pops on stage given the nature of his powers and sort of how they render his costumes. But this just looks a little lackluster. He's got his pouches. Yeah, he's got the pouches, and he's in a blue and gold costume. But he looks very young to me in this art. And maybe Grandpa Dayspring has just finally hit an age where everyone just is younger than me. I just turned 40 this year, but I'm like, he looks like a 25-year-old. And you'd be like, yes, that's probably around his age in the comics. I'm like, oh, geez, I need to go drink something now. Because I'm just old and decrepit. But he looks a little too youthful is what I'm saying. And, you know, them being based in Alaska, not something that is completely off for the X-Men. The Alaskan landscape is a big deal for the X-Men. It has been where Cyclops and a lot of his stories have unfolded. Messiah Complex. Oh, just a lot of good stories come out of Alaska. I'm happy with them being in Alaska. Send them to Alaska. I have no qualms with the X-Men being in Alaska. I want them to own it. I went to Alaska two summers ago. I guess now it would be two summers. So not last summer, but the summer before last. I loved Alaska. Recommend it to anyone. Such a wonderful place. All right, our next one is Uncanny X-Men, and the creative team for here is Gail Simone and David Marquez, and the team roster includes Rogue, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Gambit, and Jubilee. This series looks to be the most traditional of the three, with Rogue leading a team based out of New Orleans. Also love New Orleans. And emphasis on the X-Men as outlaw superheroes. I mean, outlaw superheroes is an interesting way to describe the X-Men. I personally like how that adjective sounds, outlaw, with a noun like superhero. So I don't dislike that. But I don't know if I would have ever historically called the X-Men outlaw superheroes. I would call X-Force outlaw superheroes, but I would never call X-Factor or X-Men as outlaw superheroes. I mean, there have been times where the X-Men have been outlaws. Yes. But I'm just saying in a major sense, if you're going to tell me if IGN here is saying that this is the more traditional of the three titles, I'd be like, I don't know if outlaw is how I would give an adjective for the X-Men. But this is just me disagreeing with the writer, not me disagreeing with the concept. How about that? The roster is fairly similar to the iconic blue team from the 90s series, and the series may be aimed at tapping into nostalgia surrounding the upcoming animated revival series, X-Men 97. Whoops, I thought this article was written 2 days ago. Okay, scroll down to learn more, which debuts in 2024. Oh, it was updated. So it was posted on March 14th, and it was updated on April 12th. All right. And the article is by Jesse Shadeen. All right, Jesse, I see what you did there. You updated your article. Very smart, because I did type in X-Men relaunch, and this was the first that came up. And very, in my day, we never updated articles. We wrote new ones. So I'm very smart on IGN's news, on IGN's front. Very smart. This is why IGN is a great place for resources and news. Okay. I like Gail Simone quite a bit. Obviously, Birds of Prey, huge, huge fan. She is an icon. I have no qualms with her spearheading Uncanny X-Men. This is something that had been rumored for a while. Dave Marquez as well. Solid writing. The roster of Rogue, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Gambit, and Jubilee. It's a very interesting roster, isn't it? Because Rogue, Gambit are married. Nightcrawler and Rogue are step siblings. We have now a family book. And I would love for Mystique and Destiny, for Creed, for Sabretooth, for the entire Darkholm, Atler, Creed family to come together and have its messy drama. I think one of the things that the Krakoan Age definitely did not get right was a lot of the interpersonal relationships that these characters have and the drama that arises out of them. Give us great dramatic beats. I want to see Rogue and Nightcrawler maybe disagreeing and them being siblings about it, right? I know they're step and I know they found each other later on in life, but siblings are siblings and family is complicated. Maybe Nightcrawler, after finding out that Irene is really his birth mother and Irene does not get along with Gambit very well, maybe they're, you know, Nightcrawler and Gambit are not going to get along, you know? Gambit's going to be like, man, I really hate my mother-in-law. And Nightcrawler is still coming to terms with, hey, she's actually my birth mother. How dare you speak about her? I'm still processing my emotions for her. We also have family in Wolverine and Jubilee. They are found family. They are sidekick and mentor. I love that vibe. Would I go back to Jubilee being a sidekick? I think we're well past Jubilee being a psychic figure to Wolverine. But that doesn't mean that, like, listen, their friend said I looked up to when I was, you know, in my teens. They were like maybe a couple years older than me. And now, even in my 40s, when I sit down to them, I still look up to them and we fall into old habits. So maybe that's how it is. But however they decide to do that, I think these characters are in great hands with Gail Simone and David Marquez. Wow. You know, as I'm talking about these titles out loud, I'm like, you know what? This doesn't sound too bad. Like, I'm here for it. I mean, you're going to give me Gail Simone writing a Rogue-led team in New Orleans? Okay, you have my curiosity. I'll come in for the first issue, but it better be good. I think my point in saying that there's no big hype is not necessarily the lack of talent that's coming in the X-Books or that we don't have characters that are front and center that people want to see, but more that I just, there, this doesn't seem like a situation or a book that a lot of people are coming running to. If you are going to be leaning into that nostalgia aspect of the blue and gold team and having the X-Men back in a world that fears and hates them, I would say open up the mansion again. You know what I mean? And just have everyone living at the mansion and the X-Men being a school. I mean, don't tiptoe around it. Just go directly back to it. Is all I'm saying. You know, that would be me. But okay. All right. Exceptional X-Men with Ewing and Carmen Carnero. And the team roster is Kate Pryde, Emma Frost, Bronze, Axel, and Melly. And the release date is September 4th. And Uncanny X-Men is August 7th. And the X-Men title is coming July 10th. All right, so Exceptional X-Men. No X-Men line would be complete without a series focused on the next generation of mutant heroes. And that's where Exceptional X-Men comes in. In this series, Kate Pryde is summoned back into the fray to shepherd a cast of new characters. Naturally, she'll be working alongside her best frenemy, Emma Frost. Emma Frost and Kate Pryde are no longer frenemies. They need to let it go. It worked so well when Kate came back to the X-Men during the Astonishing era, in that Reloaded era where Whedon took over, but Emma and Kate have grown so much in the Krakoan age. In many ways, they've come to respect each other, for better or for worse. And I mean, everything you need to know about the Kate Kitty situation is when Emma slaps Shaw and says, call her Kate. That's it. Longtime fans of Kitty Pryde can count on these kinds of adventures you expect from her as a classic favorite, while I hope new and old readers alike will get to love this all-new team of young mutants, Ewing said. Kitty, the one-time kid sister figure of the X-Men, has to reckon with her own memories, good and bad, of being a child of Xavier as she navigates a role as leader and mentor for a new generation of mutants who are trying to make their way in a time of crisis. Kate has been a leader for a very long time, though. I mean, respect X-Men history. She took over the mansion during X-Men Disassemble. She was headmistress. So, you know, Kate has been a focal point of the X books for almost 30 years now in a meaningful way. We know she was in the bullet for a couple years there during the Utopian era, but she came back and everything was fine. Kate has been front and center. I would argue, if we're going to pull hairs about it, I will say that Kate taking on the all new X-Men, the 05 during the Bendis era, which happened in 2013, we are now in 2024. She has been a leader in the X-Books for at least 11 years at this point. I hope that for some 13 or 14-year-old readers, this might be the first comic book they pick up. Oh, that's a really lovely line right there. Working on the series has been a ton of fun, as Carmen Canedo's art is bringing so much dynamicism to these pages, and the entire X team of writers is in a flurry of sharing scripts and feedback and ideas. Agreed. Carmen Canedo, wonderful artist. Love her. She was on X-Men Red. I've reached out to her in the past. I would love to have had her on the podcast. She doesn't really speak English. My Spanish is sort of broken. I understand Spanish very well. I can read it. I can write it. But when it comes to speaking in, I do not enough to do an entry. I have enough to be able to have conversations and sort of bounce off of ideas, but I don't think to do an interview. Okay. But anyways, great team again. Let's see. I don't know about Bronze, Axel, and Melly. I don't know how I'll bond with them, but sure. Let's see where we go with them. How about that? Let's see where we go with them. All right. So we have three more titles that we're going to discuss. Our next one is X-Force, and the creative team is Jeffrey Thorne and Marcus Tu. And this consists of Forge, Rachel Summers, Betsy, Sage, Surge, and Tank. It's interesting that they call them Rachel Summers and Betsy Braddock and not codenames. Betsy is not in her Captain Britain outfit anymore. Let's see. Marvel is delivering a reimagined X-Force team as part of the From the Ashes relaunch. This is going to be coming out in July 2024. And this new team is led by Forge, who's determined to harness his brilliant mind to solve the greatest problems facing the world today. He'll assemble a team that includes the new mutant power couple of Rachel Summers and Betsy Braddock. X-Force will also feature a rotating cast of guest stars, including Deadpool, which, of course, why wouldn't you have Deadpool? I mean, it's coming out in July 2024. You would be stupid not to have Deadpool on the cover of a comic during this time. It's fair. It's fair. I get it. There's so much hype for Deadpool. I cannot believe the reaction to my pitch, said Thorne in a statement. That sounds like X-Force to us. It's a new vibe and a different mission, but it is still X-Force. Looking at the books coming out of under this banner, I'll just paraphrase the prophet, Sheryl Crow. All I want to do is have some fun. Oh, great philosophy. And looking at what I'm getting to do and what the others are bringing, I'm absolutely not the only one. You know, when I think of X-Force, I think of the traditional X-Force and Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force. They're doing the work that no one wants to do, right? Listen, Benjamin Percy, I think Benjamin Percy, first of all, he has a great voice. I've met Benjamin Percy a couple times. What a wonderful voice. His X-Force, when the Krakoan Dawn of X books kicked off, X-Force was one of my favorite titles. Obviously, God Queen Jean Grey was on it. But I quickly kind of like fell off of the book. But that's not to say that other people didn't enjoy it and that it wasn't solid storytelling. But it never really felt like X-Force to me. It would say the same thing here. You know, I would have had Sam Guthrie lead the team. I would have had Sunspot lead the team. I would have had Danny Moonstar lead the team. I would have had Cable lead the team. I would have had a resurrected Nate Gray lead the team. Although Nate is technically not dead. He's just in the Age of X-Men universe still. Okay. But I don't know about Forge leading X-Force. I don't mind Forge leading X-Force. Factor, I think that could be good. You have Betsy and Deadpool here, and they served in X-Force, and they get it. So fine, those two are great. But Sage, you know, I think of her mostly during Extreme X-Men, and she was more of an information data analyst who is wonderful when written correctly. Who's more of a detective, but I don't know if I would say like a wayward mercenary. Serge and Rachel, listen, Rachel has been through it in life and in the next life and other lives. I don't know if this version of Rachel is 100% X-Force bound. You know, Serge, we've seen have a temper before, so it's possible that we're going to see these characters really get into their dark side, but I need them to get really raw, right? And I wonder if we're going to tackle what happened with Forge during Ghost Boxes years ago with Astonishing X-Men. I would just be curious to see where this entire team is going to go. I will say that, I mean, Jeffrey Thorne's, you know, pitch about him wanting to have fun. Good. Listen, sign me up. I want fun. I want to have so much fun with these characters. Show it. All right, I'm going to leave the Gene book for last, and we're going to go to NYX. And the creative team for NYX is Colin Kelly, Jackson Lansing, and Francisco Mortarino. And the team roster includes Noel, Wolverine, Miss Marvel, Prodigy, and Sophie Cuckoo. Oh, is that? Man, that does not look like Sophie Cuckoo at all. Not at all. Did not recognize her. But Marvel is reviving NYX as part of From the Ashes. NYX was, of course, the original series that introduced Laura Kinney, aka X-23, aka Wolverine, into the comics because she initially debuted in X-Men Evolution. The new series will follow a group of mutants making their way on the streets of New York City as a flood of mutants return to the city in wake of Krakoa's destruction. Krakoa's destruction, huh? As with the original NYX, X-23, or Wolverine, as she's known these days, will be a major character. The series will focus on Miss Marvel, who was recently reborn as a mutant. Listen, we are good friends with Zenobia Shroff here at Power of X-Men, who plays Mama Khan in The Marvels and Miss Marvel. We love her, and we love Iman Vellani as Miss Marvel, but as I've said, I think it's from an editorial perspective, from an IP perspective, I think it's such a mistake making Miss Marvel a mutant. I'm happy she's spearheading this book. I'm happy that Marvel is still continuing to push her, given that the character really is part of one of the biggest MCU flops. I really appreciate that. That tells me that Marvel truly believes in their characters. But man, I just don't want to set the character up for failure. I want Miss Marvel to have her own solo book, leading the champions. Oh, that would just make it, I would love it so much if she was leading the champions. Do we still not know what her mutant powers are? And also, she's wearing her traditional Miss Marvel outfit in this promo image. What happened to her new X-Men outfit? I don't know what Miss Marvel's powers are. Have they been explained? That's all I want to know. Okay, the opportunity to take on these characters is both an incredible challenge and an amazing honor, Lansing added. Sophia Nolan and Prodigy have been personal favorites of mine since their time on New Mutants and New X-Men. In a sense, we've become who we are right alongside them. Oh, man, I'm so old. I'm like, oh, I grew up with the Generation X. Generation X were the characters I grew up with, you know, who were around my age. I remember I was very much an adult when they were doing the rebooted New Mutants and New X-Men post-Morrison. Oh, I'm so old. Okay. And returning Laura to NYX, which in a radically different context that centers her heroism over her victimhood. Beautiful line. Beautiful. That is a beautiful line. That gorgeous line. That is your title right there. Right there. You have just sold me on this book. Feels like the chance to really bring the character full circle and help her grow into the next phase of her lives. All right. So, again, the creative teams and the characters and their approaches don't sound terrible. It's just the overall lack of enthusiasm going into it. All right. But our last title from Melia that we are getting for From the Ashes is a Phoenix title starring God Queen herself, Jean Grey. And the creative team is Stephanie Phillips and Alessandro Miracolo. And the release date is July 2024. And building on off of the events of Fall of the House of X, Jean Grey will again be bonding with the Phoenix Force for From the Ashes. This new series explores what happens when Phoenix ventures into the Marvel cosmos and tries to use her incredible power for good. But no matter what she does, Jean can't seem to escape the curse that is being Phoenix. This is where I'm going to be a little bit more of a nitpick because, like, no more Dark Phoenix stories, please. No more Dark Phoenix stories. That's it. We are done with Dark Phoenix. It was done. It was done very well. But we need to move on from Jean being Dark Phoenix. Ah, Jean is one of the most powerful characters I've ever written, writer Stephanie Phillips said. The beauty and challenge to Jean is that she is imbued with a cosmic force alongside the moral shortcomings and empathy of a human being. The dichotomy between those two is something incredibly special about Jean and means that she is constantly doing a dance between humanity and absolute power. Yeah, that's a theme that was introduced at the end of The Dark Phoenix, where the Watcher says Jean Grey could have lived to become a god, but it was important for her to die human. I will say, this is why we have White Phoenix. So that dance is what we hope to have on full display in the story, a cosmic ballet that shows how beautiful the Phoenix Force can be, thank you, when working in tandem with Jean Grey. And let me assure you, Alessandro has made that cosmic dance look absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, so this is going to be a title that I'm going to, like, wake up at midnight to try to read, or 3 a.m. when they drop on Amazon. I've always wanted Jean in the cosmos as White Phoenix, completely in charge of her power and operating on a cosmic level. This is why I've always said, I like Scott and Emma. Scott and Emma, to me, are very human characters with a lot of baggage that they mask, right? Emma hides it with more humor and wit. Cyclops hides it with being a Boy Scout. They work so well together. Jean has the ultimate power. She has ascended the human coil. She deserves to be sailing the cosmos, working on a universal scale to protect the balance of good and evil. Okay, yes. I would like her in a White Phoenix costume. I'm going to be shady when I say this. I don't like this costume. Where's her sash? If you're going to give her a Green Phoenix costume, like, give her a sash. I mean, it is 100% the original Green Phoenix costume minus a sash and the headpiece that she has during the Jim Lee era. That's it. That's the only things that are different. So give her a sash. She's sailing the cosmos in a big Firebird. Let's have some of that theatricality, please. I'm unfamiliar, I'm going to be honest, with both these writer and artist. I don't know Alessandro, his art very well. I'm assuming Alessandro's boy. I don't know Alessandro's art. Stephanie, I don't know her writing either. I'm going to have to read some stuff. I may have read some of her stuff, but just haven't noticed. But listen, let's see how everything unfolds. Anyways, Familia, how do you feel? That's like, what, a two-hour episode? How do you feel about From the Ashes? Slide into our DMs and let us know. And I'm so glad that we were able to talk comics today.